Item number 14, Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. This is the Four Waters Non-Industrial Timber Management Plan and Timber Harvest. And for consideration of a conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements. And I'm not sure what we decide as far as taking 15 with it. We have very similar presentation for both. So I guess we'll proceed and take a break after talking about the Four Waters and deal with that one. So giving our staff presentation this morning is Julia Dyer.
I'll be presenting items 14 and 15 in combination.
You want to do those together?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I need a moment to put them on the laptop.
While she's getting that squared away, I'll just remind you again that these are the two items where we have the most information that came in after the agenda was prepared, which we actually expected because this was noticed 30 days prior to the board meeting, so we're accepting written comments right up through today. So we have a City of Santa Cruz letter, August 31st. The Sierra Club letterhead letter of August 31st. And by the way, I'll keep going through the letters so make sure you have them all, but I just want to point out that I'd say most of them address both plans, so that's why one of the reasons for talking about them together. And let's see. We have Big Creek letter, July 6th, which is actually on the that was more on the previous status report we had for timber harvest activities. And then we have Redwood Empire letter of August 23rd, which was also having to do with the overall process. We have the Q&A document that we prepared to respond to board member questions on both of these items. And then we had our supplemental sheet. It says prepared September 6th, yellow paper, which responds to the letters that we had received as of the time of preparation of that. Let's see. And then a letter, August 31st, from Stephen Dousman regarding, that one's strictly regarding the Four Waters item. A letter from Catherine Moore, dated August 28th, and that's regarding strictly the Four Waters item. And then Lompico Watershed Conservancy, August 31st. A September 1st letter from Eric Moore regarding the Four Waters item, and I think that's all of them.
Roger, is everybody here who needs to be here for this item? I don't see a lot of people here. Are they?
No, they're not.
No. Okay. Do we know if they're on their way or?
Yes, they're on their way.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Do we know how far away they are? Maybe we can take some of the later items, the administrative items.
Did you hear from them on the way, or?
I haven't heard from them on the way, but yesterday when I spoke to them, I told them that my best guess was 9:30, but I didn't say I can guarantee it wouldn't be before, but So I think they're counting on that, and all of them are driving from Santa Cruz this morning.
Are they parties?
Yeah.
Oh well. Yeah, well, I think we need to wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't we skip over this item?
We need to resolve our technical difficulties anyhow. So.
Okay. Well, but I'm wondering if, while you're trying to resolve those, if that's going to prevent us from, say, doing item 18A.
Well, we could go on to 19.
Okay. go backwards to agenda item 14. And Julia, are you all up to speed now with your presentation?
Yeah, it looks like we have everything sorted.
Good. Wonderful. I would just hand it a letter.
I think you were handed a page of a letter?
No, no, no.
Is that
it's actually it's a whole letter, but is this different than the one that we
It's only different
received?
In the one page which
is the author Eric Moore?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that there was concern that there was a missing page in that letter,
okay.
And we wanted to make sure you had the complete letter.
Okay.
Page 3.
Okay, well, we're back to items 14 and 15. The Four Waters NTMP timber harvest and the Eureka Gulch timber harvest for consideration of conditional waiver waste discharge requirements. Julia?
Good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board. I'm Julia Dyer, an environmental scientist here on staff with the Central Coast Water Board, and I'm here today to present to you items 14 and 15 in combination. I'm presenting these two items together because a lot of the basic information is the same. Where there's a deviation from the basic information, I'll explain site-specific details for both of these plan areas. But these are both proposed individual conditional waivers for waste discharge requirements, which the board will have to make separate decisions for each one of them. And the two timber harvest plans that we're considering for individual waivers are the Four Waters Non-Industrial Timber Management Plan. And I'd like to remind the board that a non-industrial timber management plan is a type of plan that's approved once by CDF, and then the landowner is able to re-enter the property subsequently over a set interval cycle. But each time they re-enter the property, that triggers them needing to apply for or submit a report of waste discharge requirements with us seeking approval under the general conditional waiver, which this board adopted in July of 2005. The second plan that you're considering for approval of an individual waiver is the Eureka Gulch 1 timber harvest plan.
Julia, that's the NTMP is in perpetuity, right?
Correct. So this is just a reminder of the board of the eligibility criteria. This is the eligibility criteria matrix that the staff uses to determine the appropriate monitoring tier level. Plans that receive a tier ranking of 1 through 3 are eligible for the general waiver. Plans that receive a tier 4 ranking must be enrolled or adopted under an individual waiver or a waste discharge requirement, as both of these plans have been given a tier 4 status. Both Eureka Gulch and the Four Waters received high cumulative effects ratios, high drainage density index, and a medium soil disturbance factor, as you can see, leads to Tier 4. So one of the most common questions I get when I discuss the Tier 4 status for individual conditional waivers is, what's the difference between enrolling the plan under a general waiver versus under the individual conditional waiver? The second most common question I get is, what bumped that particular plan into Tier 4? So to answer the first question, there's four key differences when a plan is categorized as Tier 4 versus eligible for enrollment under general waiver, and that's that the plan must be heard before the board, and that's something that the board has requested in July of 2005. When they adopted the general waiver, that you wanted to see plans that receive that higher status first be able to have an opportunity to comment and make modifications and adopt the plan individually. Additionally, the public has an opportunity to make public testimony before the board, as they will be able to today. I will prioritize my inspections for winter and post-harvest inspections towards Tier 4 plans. And finally, individual conditional waivers allows the inclusion of site-specific conditions, and I'll discuss the site-specific conditions proposed under these two waivers further on in the presentation. And I'd like to point out that the monitoring remains the same. The monitoring plans that are proposed before you today are the same as if this plan, either one of these plans, were adopted under the general waiver.
And if you were going to propose a WDR, that wouldn't change?
Correct. It would not change.
It would just be a different permit form.
Right. That's correct. So just a quick overview of the watersheds in Santa Cruz County. We have the San Lorenzo River watershed here with the city of Santa Cruz in the south. Highway 1 travels along the coast to the lower Pajaro. The city of Watsonville is included in the lower Pajaro and includes the Corralitos Creek subwatershed. So the first plan I'm going to speak to you about specifically is the Eureka Gulch 1, which is located in the Corralitos Creek watershed. So what you're looking at here, the Corralitos Creek drainage on this side, the Browns Creek drainage on this side, these converge down into the lower Pajaro. And the plan, the Eureka Gulch 1 plan, is located right there along the Corralitos Creek. Now what you're looking at here is one of the plan maps that the discharger submitted with their original timber harvest plan to CDF. And I've included highlights to allow us to differentiate between these different maps, symbols, and lines. So these red marks are the timber harvest boundaries. We have one island within the plan area that is excluded from harvest because there's not merchantable timber within in that zone. And just as a quick thing to point out, this is approximately 160-acre plan. So along the eastern boundary of the plan area, we have the Corralitos Creek, which is a Class 1 creek. Class 1 means that it's a creek that either has fish seasonally or year-round or habitat that can accommodate fish species. These two lines represent Class 2 watercourses. Class 2 designation means that they're perennial or seasonal streams that do not contain fish species but aquatic non-fish species and benthic macroinvertebrates. And these dotted blue lines represent Class 3 watercourses that do not have aquatic species but have a defined canal and are capable of transporting a sediment to a higher class stream. And so this also gets into answering our question of why was this plan promoted into Tier 4. In the previous slide, I showed you that this plan is within the Corralitos Creek watershed, which has a high cumulative effects ratio. 35% of that subwatershed has been harvested, selectively timber harvested, in the last 15 years. So that starts with the cumulative effects ratio. And I neglected to mention that there isn't just one factor that bumps a plan up into Tier 4. There's a combination of factors that come together to achieve that Tier 4 ranking. So the first of which is the high cumulative effects ratio. The second of which is a high drainage density index, which means that in relation to the size of the plan, there's a high amount of water courses. And as you can see at this plan, there is that's the case. There's 1 mile of Class 2 stream and a total of 2 miles of water courses associated with this plan, either adjacent to or within the plan area. Additionally, roads associated with this plan, these green lines as designated in the legend, represent haul roads associated with the plan. These are the roads that logging trucks will be using to transport logs that have been stacked at a landing to transport to the mill. And this plan contains 3.5 miles of roads. Now, on March 7, 2007, I participated in California Department of Forestry's pre-harvest inspection for this plan. And on that inspection, I took this photo. And this is a representative photo of those haul roads that I just designated with the green lines. As you can see, it's in excellent condition. It's well maintained. There's not signs of erosion or any other potential threat to water quality. And I mentioned in the parentheses that this is near a water course, this particular section of road. The technical reference for that is that it's within the WILPES, the Watercourse or Lake Protection Zone, which whenever you have an area of the timber harvest within a WILPES zone, there's additional restrictions on the timber harvest itself. Finally, within the Eureka Gulch timber harvest area, there's included 21 landings and 3.5 miles of skid trail that are represented by these yellow dots and blue lines. So the amount of roads and skid trails and landings contributed to a moderate or medium soil disturbance factor rating. So between the high cumulative effects ratio, high drainage density index, and the moderate soil disturbance factor, that led to the Tier 4 ranking for this plan.
Julia, how many of these landings and skid trails and roads are you able to actually inspect yourself?
That's a difficult question to answer. We don't inspect 100% of them, but we make an effort to view a representative sample is the best way I could describe it. We review the timber harvest plan in advance, and areas that seem like there might be a concern or a threat to water quality, I focus on those parts of the infrastructure. This plan has a landing within the Wilpez, which is right here. As you can see, it's on the edge, and then the creek's right there, so I make a point to go and see that
area. Excuse me, and what's Wilpez again?
It stands for Watercourse Lake Protection Zone.
Thank you.
Did I answer your question?
No, it does, and you know, the photograph you showed previously of the road, which was in, you know, good condition, is that representative of all the roads that you saw?
Correct, yes. Okay. It's very much representative. But again, that one was within the watercourse and lake protection zone, so that's why I focused on my efforts for the inspection to make sure I see all sections of roads that are within that zone and whatnot. And if those look good, then I have a greater comfort as to the condition of the other roads.
Okay.
So that's pretty much what it boils down to.
So that if you were to see, and I'm just thinking proactively,
yeah,
if you were to see something somewhat problematic, you would want to look at other skid trails or landings.
Precisely.
Or sections of road.
Right,
okay.
Yes,
just
absolutely.
Don't forget, you are our eyes and ears,
yeah,
out there.
Mm-hmm. I definitely take that to heart. I remember that when I'm out there.
All right.
And I try to take photos that I can show to you that are representative of what I'm seeing out there as well.
And who decides where you go? I mean, do you have any input on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's led by CDF, but they always ask, what do you want to see? Where do you want to
right.
go? And then by the end of the inspection, they always ask, have you seen everything you want to see? So,
perfect.
Yeah, they're very accommodating in that way.
Great.
So again, 3.5 miles of skid trails on this plan, 21 landings, and as I described, that's what converged to the Tier 4 ranking for this particular plan. So, and as I mentioned about the difference between a Tier 4 ranking and conditional waiver, there's the ability to require site-specific conditions within the order, and this photo represents one of those site-specific conditions that you probably read about. Condition O within the Eureka Gulch 1 Timber Harvest Plan. And what you're looking at here is at the end of a haul road in the northeast corner of the plan area. 9 years ago, this wasn't the end of the haul road, but a landslide came through, and that's what you're looking at as a landslide right here and took out the haul road. The toe of the landslide is about 300 feet from the nearest Class 2 water course. And this landslide separates the haul road from a landing and some skid trails on the other side. So what the discharger is proposing to do for this harvest is build a temporary road over this slide area so they're able to access the landing and skid trails on the other side. It will allow them to access an additional 10 to 15 acres of merchantable timber harvest area. And it will provide them with an opportunity to improve some of the drainage structure on the other side. And they'll... So now I'm getting into what the specific conditions are that you'll see in this plan, that this temporary road over this landslide feature will only be in for one dry season. They'll completely abandon the area prior to any winter period. That the entire time of construction and deconstruction of this area, the registered professional forester will be on site. This site was already inspected by an engineering geologist, but as an additional condition within the order, the registered professional forester must call the engineering geologist if they come upon something unanticipated that might contribute to further destabilization of this site. So that would be condition O of the waiver.
And can you direct our attention to where that is? Is that on
Absolutely.
Page 7 of 8?
And Julie, do you get to see the reports of that engineer and their recommendations?
Yes.
And do you get to comment on those, or do you give approval or disapproval? Or
absolutely. If I see something in there that makes me feel like that there's a threat to water quality that they're not addressing, I'm able to comment and require.
Okay.
And especially with the case of an individual waiver, if I felt like they didn't address something in there that might be a threat to water quality and adopted the timber harvest plan anyway, we could add that as another condition of the timber harvest. But I'm comfortable with this area because it is far removed from a water course, and the registered professional forester will be on site. I can look up that page reference.
I think you mean condition N on pages 6 of 8 and 7 of 8 of attachment 1.
It is condition N in the subsequent revisions of this document. It got bumped to O.
Oh, okay. So well, this is what we've got.
Yeah. So, yeah, and what you have, you're correct. It is condition N on page 7 of 8.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
But that's the language that we changed.
No, we changed the language about the herbicide application in the Four Waters.
Oh, okay.
And I'll point that out when we get there too.
All right, thanks.
Are you doing Eureka Gulch first, then Four Waters? Is this being mixed up?
I'll go through my full explanation of Eureka Gulch specifically, and then I'm going to move into my explanation of Four Waters.
Okay.
So still on Eureka Gulch, this is the condition. Oh, in your version of the order. There was a camp of trespassers, and associated with their camp area are numerous plastic, metal, glass bottles. There's hundreds of them out there. You can also see where they abandoned a tent out there. And so the next condition is that the discharger must remove all non-forest debris associated with this camp. And I will confirm that on a follow-up inspection that they've done that when I conduct my winter inspection for this plant area. So moving on to the site-specific conditions for the Four Waters Non-Industrial Timber Management Plan. This plan is located in the San Lorenzo River watershed, specifically in the Newell Creek subwatershed. And again, going back to answering that section, that second question about what promoted this plan to Tier 4, the Newell Creek subwatershed also has a high cumulative effects ratio. 27% of that subwatershed has been selectively harvested in the last 15 years. And again, what you're looking at is one of the plan maps submitted with the non-industrial timber management plan. Again, these red lines represent the timber harvest boundary, and these grayed-in areas represent areas where they will not be conducting timber harvest activities. And again, that's due to the fact that those areas contain a chaparral brush species, not merchantable timber land. So this represents the Newell Creek Class 1 water course that travels through the plant area. This is the west branch of the Newell Creek. And I'd like to take a moment just to mention here about, again, one of the comments that we received in the comment letters about monitoring station T5. There's a crossing right here, crossing 16, where I had proposed that we conduct turbidity monitoring in that area. And since the comment letters and my discussion with the forester, I misunderstood the flow dynamics on this site. I was under the impression that the flow continued this way across the property, but in fact the flow moves along the way I'm showing here in the PowerPoint presentation. It just briefly comes to other property down through here and just through the side of the plant area for a brief moment before it continues off the property. So in one of the subsequent drafts of the order, I've removed that the T5 monitoring station. It would not be a representative sample of what we're seeing on the site or tell us very much about timber harvest activities in this area. And instead, we've added monitoring points up in this section, additional monitoring points to monitor not only the confluence of these two Class 1 water courses, but an unstable area associated with it. So we're going to get turbidity monitoring points above and below the unstable area and above and below the confluence. I think that would be a more appropriate use of the discharger's time as far as monitoring the site. Yes?
So then what will you be monitoring in that short segment that you characterize as a brief exposure to the timber harvest area?
There will not be any water column monitoring in that section, but that area is included on the visual inspection route. And if they're out there and they see something that looks like a failure of management practices or something that would trigger their forensic monitoring, that they would take photos and turbidity monitoring samples at that time. So again, the lighter blue lines right here represent the Class 2 water courses associated with this plan area, and these dotted blue lines represent the Class 3 water courses.
Julia?
Yes.
What's the? Can you show us where there's this issue about a monitoring station that wouldn't be on their land? Was that T5 or was that?
Yes, that was T5 because right here, where the red line represents the timber harvest boundary, is a water course crossing.
Yeah. So that's no longer an issue then.
It's no longer an issue.
Okay. All right. That's all I wanted.
Okay. So the length of Class 1 water courses associated with this plan is 1 mile of a total of 4 miles of water courses on this plan area, which is about 188 acres in size. And this is what contributed to having a high drainage density factor. Additionally, these green lines represent the roads, the haul roads, and associated with the plan area. And there's a total of 3.6 miles of road within this 180-acre water course. Now, I inspected this property on February 7th of this year, and this is a photo of one of the haul roads that I just pointed out with the green lines. So this is the haul road right here. The confluence of those two Class 1s where we're going to be doing the additional monitoring is off to the left of this picture. The unstable area that I had mentioned and that you've most likely read in the supplemental sheet regarding the comments and in my staff report is right along here. You can see this. It's described as a cut bank scarp failure, and it's comprised of this volcanic ash material, and it's slowly creeping towards the water course. This area has been inspected by an engineering geologist. They recommended the bioremediation treatment that you could see is established on this hill slope. And again, between that, the visual monitoring and the turbidity inspection, the turbidity water column monitoring, rather, and the commitment on the part of the discharger to establish a no-cut zone at the top of the scarp of 50 feet is what I feel after inspecting the site and is an appropriate treatment for what's occurring out here. It doesn't seem to respond to the typical treatments of rocking it. Trying to think of the best way to describe this. The composition of that soil material is so goopy that it doesn't respond to the rocking of it. So in my observations, the landowner is taking every step possible in order to address this slide.
Julie, at the bottom of that photo there, it looks like is there the road turn there, or is that erosion, or what is that?
Yeah, it's showing some signs of some rutting from wheel marks. Just because of the nature of that road, and that's what prompted my discussion at the site. I said this looks like it's not responding well to any kind of vehicular traffic, and that's when the landowner explained to me that the nature of that soil it wouldn't respond to rocking, and so that's why as part of the winter operations they will not use this section of road at any point in time.
It looks like the steepness of that particular road, it comes down. Is that causing discharge from that road?
I did not observe discharge on the day of my inspection, and it had been raining and was raining at the time of inspection. So it seems like it's contained to right where the disturbance is.
Are there any water courses close to that?
Yeah, the water course is directly
down below.
Down below, and there's a water course crossing. I guess from the perspective of the photographer, I took this photo. The water course crossing is behind you.
I see.
And is this, you mentioned on page 3, the main haul route leading to the plant area is in poor condition. That's not this.
No, that's some of the road infrastructure outside of the plant area.
Julia, could you go back to the plan? Yeah, maybe you could point out where that is.
It's not on this slide.
Oh,
it's off. Yeah, it's off. It's off the property. It's out of the control of maintenance for this landowner.
Okay.
But that's something I noted just as far as characterizing the surrounding environment.
So whose responsibility is that?
Whoever the landowner is for that section of road.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know specifically for that location.
Is that falling under our TMDL? process?
Yeah, I would suppose it would.
Yeah.
Yes, Lori says.
Julia?
Yes.
So why is this a non-industrial timber management plan instead of a regular timber harvest plan? Why? It doesn't look like it's just a few trees that will get cut. It potentially could be a fairly, a lot of selectively, carefully logged trees. But
correct.
Why an NTMP instead of a THP on this one?
Since I wasn't involved in that decision, is it okay if I defer to the forester or landowner to
sure.
answer that question?
Yeah, okay,
Bill?
We'll ask that.
The primary difference between a timber harvest plan and an NTMP is one perpetuity, but there's restrictions on what you can cut in terms of sustainability. The NTMP requires that you sustainably harvest the trees. So it's generally designed for the well-intentioned landowner that's going to hold on to their property over the long term, that's interested in sustainable management. It has to be under 2,500 acres to be considered non-industrial, so it's not so much how many trees, but what are the intentions and what are the goals of the property
so
owner.
Is it safe to say that you would expect either less frequent entry and or less logging, say on a per on an
lighter in general, almost exclusively lighter entries over a longer period of time, 12 to 15 year entries rather than 10, and 25 to 35% harvest versus 45 to 50 kind of an approach.
And is there I guess a corollary to that is, would the rotations be longer?
Generally, yes. Uh-huh. To achieve sustainability, each stand is different in how much volume it produces over the long term.
Okay,
but you're trying to balance that, and so oftentimes that means longer entries. Yeah.
All right.
Correct.
Yeah, thank you.
Could you please state your name for the recording?
Bill Vaughn. I'm the registered forester for
Bill Vaughn.
The property.
Thanks.
Turned off my microphone. Just in case I hadn't mentioned, just like in the case of the Eureka Gulch, the length of roads, the length of the number of landings and skid trails associated with this plan is what led to a medium soil disturbance factor, and that in combination with drainage density index cumulative effects ratio led to the Tier 4 ranking of this plan.
Julia, could I interrupt you again? I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
I read it carefully. I read the comments. Could you be absolutely crystal clear with us about the winter operations? Now, I understood it to read that winter ops here were between October 15th and November 15th. That was, for some reason, there was this period. It says on page 3 of your staff report, winter operations are proposed for this plan during the winter period, October 15th and November 15th, with a few minor exceptions. Operations are restricted to an area outside the Wilpez. Harvest activities are not permitted after November 15th. Could you clarify that statement? Does the harvest activities are not permitted after November 15th refer to the Wilpez or to the whole plan?
It refers to the Wilpez.
Okay.
And now that you read that back to me, I could have clarified that a little bit further.
Yeah, that could be a little clearer.
Yeah.
So in other words, the winter period of October 15th to November 15th refers to the Wilpez.
Go ahead and
Well, then what is that?
Bill's going to go ahead and answer that one, too.
Sorry, Bill Vaughn again. To clarify winter ops, it's a statewide definition. Typically up north, they operate during the winter period, which is, December, January, February.
Right.
And those are on rocked roads with yard or landings, and that's a standard kind of winter operating plan up there. Down here, it's a bit of a misnomer. It's not really a winter operating plan. It's an extended fall operating plan, and so it doesn't matter where you are in there, whether you're in the Wilpez or outside the Wilpez, you can only operate. It's a 1 month extension basically for dry fall conditions, or if you exceed 4 inches of cumulative rainfall as measured October 15th, then you have to cease operation. So it's basically just in the Santa Cruz Mountains, it's not it's not unusual to have a dry fall where you only have a couple of inches rain by November 15th, and it just allows you to make site specific judgment calls as to and there's also also specific language tied to the weather service forecast.
Okay, so in other words, November 15th is not a very meaningful date.
It's a cutoff date. You cannot operate after November 15th, whether you're in the Willpils or outside.
Okay, then I'm not... So are there no winter ops at all after
there
November
are no
15th?
They're not in the winter months, correct. It should read extended fall operating period.
Okay.
You can fall trees outside the WLPZ in the winter time. But okay. There's no equipment operations is how I should classify it.
Yeah.
And they do lopping, you know, they'll do debris stabilization and things like that.
Yeah, there were some comments somewhere in here that saying that crews on foot could be in there after November 15th.
Correct. Yeah, with and ATVs access to do monitoring.
How are you
going to
get logs out? I mean,
yeah, you can't. You don't.
You don't.
Yeah,
so it's
a misnomer.
So effectively, November 15th really does mean that's after that, whether you're in the Willpils or not.
Yeah,
okay, that could be clearer in the future, just so that you know it's totally clear what that means.
Okay,
that
I'll make sure.
I mean, that's quite significant to me.
I agree with you. That's important. I'll definitely make sure that that's clear in the future.
Thank you.
Sure.
Can I ask a question on the 4-inch rainfall during that period? Is that a cumulative 4 inches?
Correct.
Well, you could have a one-day event in that area for 4 inches.
Oh, yes, you can. It's happened. It's happened on October 15th.
So that means if you had a 4-inch event on October 15th, it would cease all operations for that
correct.
Year?
Correct. Mm-hmm. So, again, just to wrap up the harvest infrastructure for this plan, 2.5 miles of skid trail, 23 landings. I won't repeat myself again about drainage density index or the other factors that led to the Tier 4 ranking. And, again, just as on the Eureka Gulch plan, and a condition has been added to the order. This is on the application of herbicides that Roger was mentioning prior. The landowner within the non-industrial timber management plan had mentioned wants to reserve the option to potentially use herbicides within the plan area. So this condition is designed to address that prior to the landowner, the discharger, applying herbicides on the property for vegetation control, that they must submit for approval by the executive officer, include a map, list of herbicides that they plan on using, and design an application methods protocol. And since the time that you received the supplemental sheet, we've added that they must also submit a water quality monitoring program for herbicides for our consideration and approval. So that's the only condition associated with the Four Waters non-industrial timber management plan. So as far as monitoring and reporting, this is a combination of both plans, the requirements, because some of them are equal. The monitoring and reporting program, I'd like to remind the board, begins at the first day that they commence operations and concludes 4 years after the one-year anniversary of conclusion of timber operations. So it's about 5+ years of monitoring and reporting. And then at the end of those 5 years, they need to contact Water Board staff so we can conduct an inspection and then decide if we want to rescind the monitoring and reporting program or revise it and ask them to continue. But for these two plans, they're both required to conduct visual and forensic monitoring of their timber harvest infrastructure, and those are triggered based on rain events in the winter as well as forensic monitoring. Both plans are required to conduct photo monitoring. For the Eureka Gulch plan, the photo monitoring points are at that landing in the Willpils that I had pointed out and the road reconstruction on that slide area. For Four Waters, the photo monitoring point is at that slide area and for two of the watercourse crossings on the southern portion of that plan, as well as established turbidity and temperature monitoring points for both plans upstream and downstream of the timber area. Yes?
So there was some concern in some of the letters about Four Waters, given the requirements for how soon after a rain event the monitoring had to happen, there could be safety issues. How does How does the monitoring program deal with that? You can't, you know, what if it is a very dangerous thing to do? Moments after a storm
sure.
has technically ceased, or hour, just hours. I mean, what is your sense of the balance between the public's need to have monitoring and accountability and safety of the people doing the monitoring in this plan?
And this plan includes the condition that actually all plans have in the monitoring and reporting program, that they may not, we're not requiring them to collect monitoring samples if conditions are unsafe. I'll reference you the page, but the exact language, to paraphrase, says that if conditions are too hazardous for them to complete the photo monitoring, they need to call water board staff within 24 hours and report the conditions. We can discuss at the time what we want to do, so we can make site-specific, storm-specific.
Okay, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure for the record that's out there, because I see this coming up in comments frequently. But if it's already in there, then clearly we're not asking people to endanger life and limb.
Absolutely not. No, it's not worth it. Right. And often, I would say 99% of the time, the discharger's already familiar enough with the plan to be able to tell me it will be too dangerous to take that sample in the winter, I can tell you right now, and we find the balance between appropriate monitoring stations and maintaining safety.
Right. Thank you.
And, you know, just help to educate me a little bit.
Sure.
Okay, so in the winter it's raining a lot, presumably.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, right. But so the danger is from the flow of surface water or the ground being saturated, or how is the danger different? I mean, you still have the same steepness. The terrain is the same.
Correct. The terrain is the same, but, yeah, it's maybe high flows or okay. maybe debris jams are coming through, or conditions have changed at that particular site that might make it unstable or unsafe for them to go down there. But that's when they would call me. I haven't received such a phone call in the 2 years I've been working in this program, but I can imagine a phone call like, hey, this huge log came down and is now blocking my way down to that site, and I don't feel safe going down there. Something, you know, that's a hypothetical, but something along those lines.
Okay.
But, yeah, you're right. If it's already steep, and they'll tell me, this is going to be too steep in the winter for me to conduct a site here. Maybe it'd be more appropriate to move it to somewhere where they can access it more easily.
Yeah, but it's always going to be steep. That's not going to change, whether it's raining or not, whether it's in the summer or the winter. So,
well, I suppose I mean when we're determining what point we should do the monitoring, I might suggest one location within the timber harvest plan, and they'll say, well, that particular location is too steep. Can we move the monitoring station to wherever they have a recommendation?
Okay.
I have another question.
Sure.
I also saw a request for consideration of requiring monitoring on holidays and weekends.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something we would find acceptable. I think we're talking about conditions that trigger monitoring and observation. So the requirement to monitor whether it's a holiday or a Sunday would not be a consideration.
Correct. I'm preparing a response to that letter for the October Executive Officer's Report, and in that letter I recommend that we can't, if it's raining on Friday night or Saturday night, and let's say it's a three-day weekend, collecting a monitoring point the following Tuesday is not going to cut it. So, yeah. And if I understand correctly, maybe Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that's consistent with the monitoring and reporting programs we have throughout this office. You collect the sample when it rains, regardless of the timing of the holiday. We make an accommodation in the monitoring and reporting program that if the rain ends at midnight, you're not going out there at 4 in the morning. We extend the amount of time that they have to collect. I guess we open the window a little wider for them in that case, but yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to, I know everybody, hopefully everybody has received the supplemental packet explaining the public comments that this office has received. The one thing that has not been addressed in the supplemental sheet as far as public comments is that T5 monitoring station, but I discussed that earlier. Would be happy to discuss it further if there's any more questions. But we received a total of 7 letters, 4 of which came by August 31st, to which I committed to responding in writing to those plans. And a majority of the comments can be summarized under one of these 4 categories. Some of the comments requested that the Tier 4 plans should be adopted under a waste discharge requirement. The response in the comments is that that's not going to buy us any additional regulatory authority, or there's nothing that for these particular cases that we could do in a waste discharge requirement that we're not already doing in the individual waiver. Additional requests included strengthening of the monitoring and reporting program. I feel that the monitoring and reporting program as proposed is protective of water quality and appropriate. An additional request is to eliminate winter operations, but as Bill Vaughn explained to the board, the winter operations are pretty exclusive and are cut off as soon as there's any kind of saturated soil conditions. So even with that one site that I was showing you with the goopy soil on the road in the unstable area, the winter operations I'm very comfortable with. They're never going to be hauling logs on the area when it's saturated. So eliminating winter operations would not buy us any additional protection of water quality. There was also comments about the applicability of threatened and impaired watershed rules. These are rules that are actually under the CDF's authority, California Department of Forest Authority, pardon me, California Department of Forestry's authority to determine and impose. And any additional requirements, should the threatened and impaired watershed rules require wider buffers or any other modifications or restrictions to the plan, still would not impose any additional modifications to the monitoring and reporting program, which is, as it is, appropriate for the protection of water quality. So the recommendation is to adopt item number 14, a 4 waters order, and item 15, the order for the Eureka Gulch 1 THP. And these need to be adopted separately. And that concludes my presentation, if there's any additional questions.
I have some in the order itself.
Maybe.
But Mr. Briggs, go ahead.
Well, I guess just as a wrap-up to the staff presentation, and maybe I missed it right at the tail end there because some business we're taking care of here. But as far as summing up the changes that we're recommending, they're in the supplemental sheet. You've talked about them kind of as you've gone through.
Correct.
But to sum up, in the supplemental sheet on page 2, under comment 1, we have in the response there, it has a language change. Correct?
For comment 2?
No, comment 1.
Oh.
So, and it says response. And in the quotes there, it has language change.
Correct.
Okay, so that's one. And then on page 5 of the supplemental sheet down at the bottom, that talks about it's a proposed language change for the 4 waters one regarding the herbicides, and Julia actually added to that one orally with the monitoring plan that would have to be submitted as well.
Water column monitoring for herbicides, yes.
Right. And let's see. And then in the Q&A document.
Wait, there's one more in the supplemental sheet.
Is there?
On page 8, in response to comment 27, the turbidity requirement. I actually had a question about that change. The proposed language is that the discharger shall not cause turbidity to enter the stream. That language doesn't sound right to me. Shouldn't it say the discharger shall not cause any in-stream increase in turbidity in excess of basin plan requirements?
I need to look up something, but yeah, I'll answer that question one moment. I matched it to the language already in there regarding temperature. Item H within the order already states the discharger shall not cause alteration in stream temperature that exceeds basin plan requirements. And the modified language, which is added to condition I, which is why it bumped down the other conditions to new letters, the discharger shall not cause alteration in turbidity that exceeds basin plan requirements.
Thanks.
So what I just read is the actual language that will be in the order.
So were the other two changes in the supplemental sheets, is there different language than what was in the supplemental sheet, or is it the same?
Other than adding the requirement for monitoring water column for herbicides and the elimination of the T5 monitoring station, no.
Okay, thanks.
But you're right, that's a discrepancy that I only just now realized.
And then in the Q&A document.
Excuse me, I have one more, just a clarification. Comment number 26. I'm not clear. The comment concerned an inaccurate description of the hatchery-based run of steelhead, trout, and coho salmon. I'm not clear on what change was made. It says staff retracts the statement completely. Did you completely remove the statement, or did you just clarify that it is wild salmon?
I just clarified that it's wild salmon because that language was not in any of the order of the monitoring and reporting program. It was in my staff report. So I just retracted it. If I need to do something further, I'd be happy to.
Basically, nope. You're acknowledging the comment.
Yeah, that was incorrect.
And agreeing with it.
And agreeing, yes.
Okay, and then in the Q&A document, I don't believe, well, first of all, there are typos that you have acknowledged and are changing in the order. We don't need to go through those item by item. But as far as substantive changes, I think the only one that you referenced was the herbicide paragraph.
Correct.
So we've covered that.
Yes.
So I don't think there are any other changes from the Q&A document other than typos.
Right, I agree, okay. Yes.
All right.
And then, sorry to tag team, but...
it's okay.
In addition to removing the T5 at X16 monitoring point, you're adding another monitoring location as you described in your
correct
presentation.
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't think I mentioned that when I remove that T5 monitoring point, that removes a turbidity and a temperature monitoring station.
Okay.
In terms of moving forward with the hearings, I don't know if the board wants to ask their questions of staff for both sides at this point or move on to the Four Waters order and save the Eureka questions until we get to that order. I don't, or there may be questions that are common to both plans.
Yeah. I'd also like to add or remind the board that the foresters related to each plan have requested 10 minutes for a presentation, so I don't know how we factor that into the process.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we can have any further board questions from the staff. And then I think in terms of how we want to handle these, whether they're going to be together or separate, we have to vote on them separately anyway. So perhaps we should just do one at a time. So Four Waters first.
Okay.
Make sense?
Sure.
Get that done, and then we can move to the next one. And let's see, what else?
I'm just going to mention this just before the break.
Okay. Any other clarification needed for how we're going to handle those? No? Okay. Now, we have different foresters for each of these two plans.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, we'll break and come back at 5 of 11. But I just want to mention one thing. Mr. Sadowski, are you here? Okay. Agenda item number 9, San Simeon Community Services District. I guess you weren't here earlier, but that was resolved by way of the consent calendar. And so I did ask if there was anyone in the audience that wished to address this agenda item off of the consent calendar, and didn't see any hands raised or anyone wanting to have it pulled. So it's already been resolved, just to let you know. Okay. But I noticed that you do have a card in here for public comment. Okay, and that'll be later.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Briggs, to
no.
clarify? Okay, we'll be back at the 5:11.